10, which hopefully will be the climax of our study. So we will consider chapter 10 of the sermon to the Hebrews. Would it be possible, first of all, to have someone to read for us the beginning of the chapter, starting in verse 1 to verse, let's say, verse 10. So 1 to 10, please. Okay, maybe we can stop here. Thank you for the reading. You understand that we are coming back. We are coming back to the first day, deconstruction. It's a kind of recap we have in chapter 10. Going back to the old system, not the new one we considered this afternoon, but the first one. So it's just interesting to have this chapter, to consider this chapter today, tonight, because we close our meeting. And we can use this chapter to recap what we have said. And it's not only to say again, but we have additional thoughts here given. Just a point about, well, it's not a point of translation, but we read, since the law has only a shadow of the good things to come. Well, maybe, I don't know if it's the case here in Britain, but in France, very often this verse would be used by the evangelical against us, Adventists. Is it the case here? What would they say to us using this verse? Well, you are the Christians of the shadow. But us, we are the Christians of the reality, you know? And they want to use this verse against our Sabbath practice, isn't it? But, well, we have to know that, well, is it the Ten Commandments here? Ten Commandments which are involved? Not at all. Not at all. In the Sermon to the Hebrews, when we have the Greek, or, well, the Greek nomos, it's not nomos as such. I mean, the Ten Commandments, or the Torah, if you want to enlarge a bit your vision, nomos is quite the equivalent of covenant in the book of Hebrews, or first system. You understand what I mean? This system was only a shadow of the good things to come. It's perfectly clear. So you cannot use this text against our practice of the Sabbath. Not at all. It's not the problem here. Nomos, okay, we have nomos, but in order to interpret nomos, we have to take into consideration the context. And in the book of Hebrews, never nomos would refer to the Ten Commandments. But nomos is the equivalent kind of synonym of diateke, that is covenant or system, sacrificial system. Got the point? I think we need to be clear on that. And then, okay, we have the repetition. The law is not able to, can never, by the same sacrifices that are continually offered year after year, make perfect those who approach. So we know that. We have considered that yesterday. But we have a new idea coming here. Very surprising one again. And I'll tell you, it's in verse 2 and verse 3. What is this new idea? What is the background? What is the context? When you have this expression year after year, what is the background? Tell me. Year after year, or each year? Atonement. Day of Atonement, okay? And what is... Well, if you go back to your knowledge, and it's a good knowledge of the Old Testament, what was the Day of Atonement for? Could you explain what was going on this particular day? Cleansing of the sanctuary, but more than that.
Putting away to sin.
Yes, the end of sin. So, imagine you are a Jew, okay? You committed sin during the year, so what would you do? Normally, the procedure. You go to the sanctuary or to the temple with a sacrifice, all right? You bring it, it's done. At the end, you can rejoice. Okay. What is the text saying here about the Day of Atonement? That's quite surprising. It's not the day from which everything will be cleansed. No, not at all. It's coming back again. Goodness me. You thought you were all right, pure, kosher. It's not the case. Each year it's coming back. Could you imagine that? You thought it was the end of your sin. You thought that everything was okay. But you had maximum 1 year of relief. But the Day of Atonement, okay, your sin would come back at the surface. That is what a feeling. And that is what this Hebrews author is saying in those verses. Could not make perfect, okay, no news here. Otherwise, would they not have ceased being offered, since the worshippers cleansed once for all, would no longer have any consciousness of sin? But in these sacrifices, there is a reminder of sin year after year. The Day of Atonement is the reminder, not the way to cleanse. It's the reminder of your sin. Do you want such a system? Well, we don't want it, but maybe in our practice we use it. Okay, you ask me forgiveness, but year after year, you see, I have a label here, Lou, and I'm waiting for you. You see what I mean? It's easy to say, well, we don't want that. But in our practice, maybe sin. Well, we have good reminders, not for our sins, of course not. We have a very good memory for the sins of our fellow friends, brothers and sisters. Oh yes, of course. But she too has a good memory. Okay? So, not the day of forgiveness, but a reminder. Sound terrible. A reminder. What a system. So, you know, again, we are lost here at the end of verse 3, but hopefully there is something new coming or coming later. So I would like us now to consider verse 4 to, let's say 4 to 10, please. Someone to read.
Because it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased. Then I said, 'Here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, O God.' First he said, 'Sacrifice and offerings, burnt offerings and sin offerings, you did not desire, nor were you pleased with them, although the law required them to be made.' Then he said, 'Here I am, I have come to do your will. He sets aside the first to establish the second. And by that will, we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all.
Okay. So, again we find this idea of no sacrifice. So we know this text. Where does it come from? The quote here. We have seen it yesterday, don't we? Tell me. Yes? Okay. So that's a new quote. We should have added this one yesterday. We did not consider it, but we should add it into your list. And Jesus is the subject of it. I come, and what is... Well, we have one side, sacrifice or sacrifices. And the text says, well, God does not want. And next side, what do we have? I come to do your will. Again, you remember plural here, singular here. Of course, once for all, it has been done. You cannot have plural here. Jesus is involved. Human being, singular. I come not for sacrifices. I could have done that, said the text. I could have done that, but you don't want that. I come to do your will. Not sacrifices, but your will. Okay? So, nothing new here, except a very strong verse, and that is verse 10. What do we have in verse 10? Very important. Could you read it again? Please.
By that will, we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all.
We have been made holy by the sacrifice of Christ once for all. Do you believe that? The mission president looking at my flock, I'm not sure it's like that. Looking at myself, that is our problem. Do we believe and do we live accordingly? Again, the same question we had this afternoon. Annulment of sin here. You have been, is it said here? We have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. It's not, we will be at the end, after the judgment day and the pre-advent and the second and the third and judgment, etc., etc. Well, it's not the problem here. You have been. It has been done. Once for all, we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. If we are ready not only to preach it, but to share it with the church, I'm pretty sure that we could have big changes. How many of our church members are ready to answer to the question, are you saved? I remember once I was at Cologne, a student, and we had the week of prayer, and we had a guest pastor. He was, I think, he was in charge of the union at that time. Georges Vandenveld, maybe you knew him. And so he starts asking the question. Well, how many among you could raise their hands, saying, "Well, I'm saved tonight." And out of maybe an audience of 500, five, six hands. So he said, okay, I'm going to change completely my topic. I will not follow the topic given by the GC. I will preach the gospel. But if we ask the question in our churches today, how many? I'd say, okay, I have been sanctified. Does it mean that I am perfect? No. You remember? Luther was right. Simul iuctus, justus et peccator. At the same time, just, righteous, and sinner. We have been sanctified through the sacrifice or the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Next, 11 to 14, please.
Every priest stands daily at his service, offering repeatedly the same sacrifice, which can never take away sins. But when Christ had offered for all time a single sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God, waiting from that time until his enemies should be made a footstool for his feet. For by a single offering he has perfected for all time those who are being sanctified.
So you have the same idea repeated at the end of verse 14. The same idea, because it's an important one. And you see the point here? One offering, and so what? After this offering, what can you do? What can you offer? Christ, the only sacrifice. You say, nothing. Am I right? So, we have the climax here. Jesus is the sacrifice. We understand that the better sacrifice, singular, not we need better sacrifices. No, it's not possible because he's a human being. He can only die once. So only one sacrifice. But after this one, no sacrifice is possible anymore. You understand the point? So the sacrifice of Christ is the climax of the system, but at the same time, this sacrifice, I can call it the anti-sacrifice, just to say it's done. Never, never, never again. Christ, the sacrifice. And at the same time, Christ, the anti-sacrifice. You understand what I mean? It's the end of it. Would you be ready to offer? You will come with an animal? Crazy. Would you compare the blood of the animal with the life of Christ, not the blood of Christ? Would you compare even your son or your daughter with Christ, introduced by the by the sermon being the perfect image of God? You remember chapter 1 verse 1 to 4? Would you be ready to compare? No possible comparison. Christ is the end of the system. That is, end of deconstruction and full reconstruction coming together. Nothing is possible after that. And we have the last section of this chapter, not of this chapter, but it's the first part of the chapter. We'll consider the next one in a couple of minutes. Could we read 15 to 18, please? Sacrifice, the end of the system. Christ, the sacrifice, and the anti-sacrifice, and the end of it. God is totally amnesic here. You have the word amnesic in English? No memory. Okay?
Amnesia?
Okay. Amnesia of God. Well, you know, Lord, I'm a sinner. What are you talking about? Oh yes, I am a great sinner, you know. What are you talking about? No memory. Could you imagine that God? That is our God. That is the God which is needed for our church members too. Not the God just watching just coming back to you, but that was a good one. I don't want to contradict what you said. What have you? What are you eating? What are you looking at? But you see, just to just the God. Well, good reading or not? And what about? No, it's not for the men, but what the women? Well, well dressed, okay, and no makeup and no, okay, and the way we look at each other. What about your diet? What do you eat? Well, you have no problem here, but if you are in a restaurant, so in a restaurant when we meet with a group, Adventist group, never be the first one. you see what I mean? So, vegetarian, vegan or not, I'm the first one, you are lost. If you are the last one, okay, you can choose your menu according to what you see on the different tray, okay? So, it's not our God. What about my sin? Oh, my sins? I don't know. I don't have a clue. What a God we have. I'm so impressed and amazed, and I cannot speak. Such a God. That is the God coming from Hebrews, and I'm sure that we need him, this kind of God. I cannot have a memory about your sins. So, we have a question we need to answer to. You remember, I started with it. Continuity or discontinuity? You remember? What do you think? Maybe we are able to answer to this question. Is there continuity between the first system and the second one? Or do we have discontinuity? Well, if I refer to a verse, for example, let me check here. Verse 9. What do you read in English, in your translations? Maybe we could share translations, different translations here. Again, we should read this verse. Then he added, "See, I have come to do your will." He abolishes the first in order to establish the second. I read in my translation. That is a very strong one. He abolishes. There is no continuity. Discontinuity between the two systems. And I wonder if sometimes we are not on a bad track trying to interpret Hebrews, but Hebrews only, please. In a kind of continuity between the old system and the new system. Well, there is no continuity here. There is, well, he abolishes the first in order to establish the second. That is another way of presenting the comparison between the two systems. And I think, the two systems, and I think we have to keep that in mind. I don't see continuity in Hebrews. I could see continuity in some other parts of the New Testament. But here, I rather see discontinuity between old system and new system. He abolishes the first one in order to establish the second. The better one, yes. The better one. The sermon of the better. And then the climax, 19. Please, someone to read 19 to 25. One word. Come, you have been invited. So, could you tell your experience being invited by the king, the queen? Sorry. We are invited, not by the Queen, which is, I understand, such an experience for you, but we are invited through Jesus. Please come. Pay a visit, not pay a visit to the sanctuary, because you went to the, where was it, in Buckingham Palace?
Yeah.
Yes, but entrance and exit maybe 1 or 2 hours later. And once for all for you, probably. And never again. Sorry. But is it, well, you are invited just for a tea, a cup of tea. Let's be British. You are invited for a cup of, no. It's not you are invited for a cup of tea. You are invited to stay there. All right? That is the sanctuary in Hebrews. Please come. You are invited. The closer, the better. If you stay at a distance, you are lost. If you want to live accordingly, I mean being sanctified, please come into the sanctuary. The problem we have, I think, mainly as Adventists, is that too often we have presented this message. Well, Christ in thee is in the sanctuary. Christ only. Well, that is a good idea, but that's not enough. What is Hebrews saying to us? You are also in the sanctuary. You are also. And if we are in the sanctuary, we have to live accordingly, of course. Can you do... Well, I don't need to take examples. We are in the sanctuary with God. As the Hebrews looking outside of the tent and looking at the Shekinah. Remember the example this morning. We are just in the middle of the holy place, in the presence of God. And the word is coming... The word is there again. Come, come, come. You could say, well, but I'm not a high priest. I am the high priest. I have the ticket for the entrance. You could say, well, I'm not even a priest. No problem. I am not a Jew. The sanctuary is only for the Jews. No problem. I'm a woman. No problem. I am a Samaritan. No problem. I am impure. No problem. I am a sinner. Sin? What does it mean? Don't know this word. Has been, you remember, 925? Annulment of sin. And in addition to that, amnesia of God. What do you mean, sin? Please, come. And with which feeling? Come without fear, with confidence. We have confidence. Verse 19. It's not as the example I took 2 days ago, you entering this place and God was behind the door. Come with confidence. Okay. Let's do it. We have spent so many hours discussing among us on important topics, but the first part of the parable, you remember, it is a parabole. You remember 9:8. But we spent so many time discussing the first part of the parable. So, do we have a sanctuary up, and which size, and 1 or 2 apartments, and did he enter in 1844 or at the cross? And, well, I understand those questions, and they might, well, they may be relevant, important, but endless and endless discussions, and only Christ was in the sanctuary. But now we are invited to come, to enter with him, because the way is open, and it is said, verse 19, a new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain. You remember we had a cul-de-sac, a dead end. And the opposite of the dead end, a living way. So I want to be a preacher of the living way. And I would like you to share the same feeling. So we need, you remember, we started with chapter 5, they ought to be teachers. They ought to be teachers. But they were sluggish. Maybe I'm sluggish too. Maybe you are sluggish too. And I would like at the end of this time we spent together, for each one of us, to make the decision, well, I will not be sluggish anymore. I will preach this gospel. Reconstruction versus deconstruction. You remember the title. The temple versus the gospel. Don't be sluggish. You ought to be teachers. We have the capacity of being teachers, not because we are better than the others, but because we have been called to the ministry, or we have been called to serve the church, even though we are not employed by the church. And the message of Hebrews is, please come. The way is wide open, a new and living way. Thank you for your invitation. Thank you for the time we spent together. It has been a blessing for me. I hope it will be also a blessing for you. I think we need to preach that. That is important, because that is the gospel, and that is Christ in the middle. We started with Hebrews and Christ, and we finished with Christ. Thank you.